The following was originally broadcast on Northumberland 89.7 FM. For more podcasts and learn more about us, go to northumberland897.ca. And thank you for downloading this podcast.
Welcome to our program, Aging, a New Reality, a show that provides insight into many of the concerns that seniors have during their journey in later years. We talk to experts who will share their knowledge on subjects such as finances, nutrition, housing, and health. On today's program, we will hear the second part of Madeline Corelli's interview with Ian Buchanan, who is a registered psychotherapist. They will be discussing the role of stress in the lives of seniors and how to best deal with them. Now, here's Madeline.
Welcome back, Ian Buchanan, our registered psychotherapist. We had such an interesting talk last time we spoke, Ian. It was so fascinating because you were hitting on all of the concerns and stresses that I myself go through. And I know that I'm not the only one with all of these concerns. And we talked about what happens when our children, who are adults, are struggling finding their place, either in employment or most especially today, I think, finding a place to live. I think that's a really big concern, that what is out there is minimal and what is out there is expensive. And so the kids come back and say, what are we going to do? And you said, time for people to sit down as a unit and discuss how does this evolve, and that there are options, options that usually families don't even think about. Now I'd like to talk a little bit about the same sort of scenario, but the money that is involved in this scenario and the concerns that come along with the money. And one of the big things that I struggle with, and I think people struggle with, is, will the money last as long as I will? So yes. They tell us we're going to live a long, long time now, if we live a healthy lifestyle, obviously. Well, we're going to live, and they're projecting, you know, sort of in the next 20-year period, that we'll be averaging much closer to 100 than averaging much closer to 70. So that's a long lifespan. How do we know that we will have enough money to survive that lifespan? And how can we stop worrying about that and do something constructive?
Okay, well, to answer your first question, how do we know if we're going to have a much? That's a financial planner. That's what you go to that for. The how do we stop worrying? That's where I can help. So, and first of all, we never stop worrying. Right? There's always going to be something to worry, something that causes anxiety, but it's how do we deal with that? How do we face that? Because I think I said in the last session as well that anxiety is the fear of the unknown. Yeah. And it's like looking at our financial portfolio and saying, that's more money than I ever imagined.
Yeah.
But is it enough for me? And if you still have a spouse and you're in your as an elder adult, is that enough for both of us to live? Are we going to be able to keep the house? Are we going to be able to? Or what if, you know, we move into a retirement residence? Some of those retirement residents, they're gorgeous there. But you look at the monthly fees and people are like, how can I afford that? Am I going to, like, I think, as you said, am I going to outlive my money? Mm-hmm. And then what happens is son or daughter comes knocking on the door and says, you know, mom, dad, I've always come to you for help. And I, you know, we just can't make it. I'm, you know, I've gone to school. Maybe I have even a pretty good job, but I can't afford a place to live. I can't afford, you know, we got married, we're having kids. We now got three kids. We're in a two bedroom, like,
yeah,
you know, and then the parents are, well, can I afford to help them? Mm-hmm. Or can I not? Like, how, where am I going to be? So again, these are discussions that need to happen before, I always say before the crisis hits. Have the discussions beforehand. Find out what your position is and what the kid's position is. this is when you've got all the information so you know what you're working with. Then talk to somebody about options that maybe you hadn't even thought of, right? The two that I hear the most are, it's like, well, okay, if we sell the house and build a basement apartment in the kids' house, then they can afford to keep the house. Or, okay, well, what if the kids move in with us? We can just move into the master bedroom and give them the rest of the house. And it's like, well, those aren't always only the two only options. And they might not even be very healthy options, you know, to have everybody back together like that. Mm-hmm. If that's acceptable to you, well, then that's an option. But let's talk about other things and talk about how to mitigate and reduce the anxiety and stress that these things are causing us. Because as long as it remains an unknown, it remains anxiety inducing.
Yes.
The only way to get rid of that anxiety and stress is to make it known. And that means talk about it.
Right? Do you also recommend writing down some of these things, like writing down your worries, you know, keeping a worry journal to just get it out of your head and onto paper?
Journaling is a fantastic tool. And people who journal will tell you how cathartic it is writing these things down. However, what I find is if you're not a journaler, it becomes an extra anxiety of trying to force yourself to do this. So absolutely, if you're a journaler, if you like writing a diary, or you like, you know, you're comfortable recording your thoughts and putting them down, yes, it's a great tool. However, for those people who it's not comfortable, we have other tools.
Okay.
Because as in so many things in life, there isn't one thing fits everybody.
Yeah, agree.
And that's part of the psychotherapist's job, is to find the tool or the exercise that suits this client.
Yeah.
Because something has to be comfortable for you to do it. Because if it's not comfortable, you won't do it. And if you don't do it, we don't see results. Well, that's not what we're going to therapy for.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that's a really good point. And I know that there's a sense sometimes when people have to leave their home and maybe sell some of their possessions because they're downsizing to another home.
Yes.
That there's actually an element of grieving when you leave the place that you loved, or even a place where you felt just really comfortable. You know, it just fit every aspect of your life during that time, but now it's not going to work anymore because for, you know, multitude of reasons. It could be money. It could be you fell. It could be, you know, it's too big a house for you now to cope with, cost too much, whatever. What about the grieving that goes along with making that kind of major move, major decision?
Well, I think you hit one of the nails, which is what I tell people, is recognizing you're grieving, right? We far too often, we think I'm only going to grieve when somebody passes away. No. Grief is over any loss in your life, any big change. People who retire often don't realize they're grieving the loss of that job, the loss of that way of life. They worked their whole life towards retirement and now they're getting it. And it's like, they have to grieve that. They're looking at moving into a assisted living or even just a retirement residence. It's the grieving process of, okay, I can take some furniture with me, but I can't take a 4-bedroom house with a furnished basement and a garage with a whole bunch of stuff in it. That's not going to fit in my 600 square feet that I'm getting in the retirement residence. So what do I bring with me?
Yes.
And that's where, again, a therapist can help. And there's also a number of companies out there that I have recommended to some of my clients where they can help you in the downsizing. Mm-hmm. Most helpful often I found is if they create memory books, right? Take pictures, pictures on the wall, photographs, pictures of furniture that you had in the family for so many years that maybe you've passed on to somebody or nobody wants it anymore, right? I mean, there's a big terror actually that goes through some adult children when mom talks about, well, I'm going to pack up my 40-piece set of china and pass it on to you. And they're like, no, please.
No, thanks. It's okay.
Well, who am I going to give this place setting to? And, you know, or my teacup collection that I've had for 50 years.
Mm, yep. Mm. What about grieving and the loss of a job, like when they retire?
Well, and that's something, and again, I am so happy if clients come to me beforehand and I can prep them, I can prepare them for this, because retirement is a goal. So we work toward retirement. Then we've attained the goal of retirement. Nobody talked about what we do afterwards.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so it's like the Olympian. I've reached the finish line. Okay, now what? Well, for an Olympian, they go, they train more, and they do more exercise. But for you, it's like, okay, I'm not getting up to go to work every day. What's my purpose? What's my reason to get up? What's my worth? Right? For a lot of people, they bundled up a whole bunch of their self-worth into what they do. Right? Mm-hmm. I do this for a living. I'm this, or I work and I provide for the family. I did. Well, now what's my worth? And helping them to understand that it's a transition, right? You transition from living with your parents. And as you said, you moved out. I hope I'm never going back. You transitioned into school. You transitioned from school into whether you some people get married fairly soon. Yeah. And then, so all those are transitions. And we talk about all those and we talk about retirement. And then that's where it ends.
Yeah.
Who talks about what we do afterwards? Well, these are conversations that we need to start having so that when we retire, we know what we're going to do, right? I'm going to retire to this, right? Most people are, I'm taking 2 weeks off and doing nothing. Okay, great. Now the 2 weeks are up.
Well, I've noticed though, Ian, I've noticed that a lot of people who retire go back to work. And they work in something else. It may be part-time. But they work doing something else. And I look at people, in the entertainment business, Betty White, who worked till she was 99, because she liked it. She enjoyed it and she was good at it. Jane Fonda, she's now 83 years old. She's still working because she's good. She likes it and she's got the strength to do it.
You're listening to Aging, A New Reality on Northumberland 89.7. And now we return to Madeline Corelli and her guest, Ian Buchanan.
So I wonder, if we talk about ageism, if we have to be very careful about retirement, because we don't want to say at 65, it's game over. That's your goal. You want to retire. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right. If people come to you before they have to retire and talk about what will be my purpose.
Yeah.
And if your purpose is tied up in something that you're already doing and you love what you're doing, I'm thinking you should keep doing it if you can to some degree. You may not be able to do it exactly the same way, but to some degree.
Yes. And that's a conversation I would have with people. It's like, okay, so you're a teacher. Right? I just do that because I had a client recently. I said, you're a teacher. You're coming up to retirement and you want to retire and you've got it. Okay, great. And what are you going to do? So not taking the whole process that it took us to work through it, but she's going to take some time off and then she's going to put herself on the supply. Right? So that way, if she gets called, she does some supply work. She's a qualified teacher, but it's also, if she doesn't want to take the supply, she doesn't have to. If she wants to, she does. If she doesn't want to, she doesn't. She can call up the board and say, I'm taking 3 weeks off. Don't call me for the next 3 weeks. Mm. Okay. So that's a profession where they love to have fully qualified teachers. Right. It also, I ask people, look at some volunteer opportunities. Right. Maybe you have a skill that you were doing your whole life as a skilled trade. Well, is there a Boys and Girls Club that you can teach them how to do metalwork or woodworking, or that you can teach people, newcomers to Canada? Mm-hmm. Right? There's all kinds. I mean, I'm not trying to think of this. There's all kinds of opportunities where you can feel valued, which is what it's come down to, is when I work, I feel valued. I feel appreciated. And if we didn't plan for our retirement, not financially, but what we're going to do and how we're going to feel emotionally, if we plan for that, then we can keep contributing things that make us feel valued and appreciated.
Yeah. And you know, I think this is the one time in life where hopefully if you've got enough money, you know, not destitute, but if you've got enough money where you can say, using your example before, what could I do?
Yes.
In terms of other things, maybe, you know, I'm a great teacher and, you know, but what could you do that could use the same skills and maybe you still get paid to do? Maybe there's an opportunity out there that you can continue to do what you do, but in a different way, with a different leaning, with a different group of people.
Yeah. And again, an example, I it seems to be teachers talk to me quite a lot, but I had another teacher and what she decided as she took a year off and then afterwards she got a job working at a daycare. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't a teacher anymore. She was still working with children and that, but she called it fun.
Yeah.
She said, I'm just having fun with the kids now. It's not a job, even though she's getting paid. Yeah. She said, it's not a job anymore. It's not like I have to perform and I have to have kids produce something. She said, I get to go and have fun with the kids. Right.
You know, how lucky that she found that she thought of that it came up as an option for her.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
But then, and I don't want to think that it's only just teachers. There are other people. And as I said, you can have volunteer or paid opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. There are lots of, I use examples of my client and I don't want to name the big box store, but they have kids times where kids come in and learn how to build something. Mm-hmm. And this gentleman is a retired house framer builder. And so he goes in and he teaches kids. He's getting paid to work there, but he teaches kids how to make little birdhouses or how to make a toolbox 1 week or how to make something else. So it's, you know, he's having fun with the kids. And then he's also working around the store, still imparting his knowledge for somebody who can no longer carry the loads of 2x4s and fling them up and things because he's like, I can't do that part
anymore. I can't do that anymore, but I can do other things. And you know, when I go into a store or a facility of any kind, I want to see people of different age groups that I can work with, relate with, ask questions of, you know, and enjoy, because it gives me a diversity of people's thoughts and opinions and knowledge and help that they can provide. So I really prefer to do that. And I think that we have to be very careful as we age, that we don't become a victim of this ageism envelope that I dislike intensely, but that we can use our age and wisdom in ongoing support of people in a variety of different settings so that our purpose becomes more to contribute, to in some way offer what we know and what we have to other people at all other demographics, including our own.
Yeah. To continue to show that we still have value, right? We are still a valuable person and we are, right? We are. It doesn't matter as you said earlier, your financial status. If you still have value in knowledge, and knowledge and experience are, well, that's what the younger people are lacking, but it's what they're gaining. So what they have in energy and strength that we would love to know how to get that energy back, they can learn from us, from experience, knowledge, and our expertise in some areas. So we just trade off, I like to say it, of, okay, so I'm not climbing up the ladder with a load of shingles on my shoulder like I did 20 years ago, but I can be the guy on the ground ordering the shingles for how much the roof needs. And I can be, you know, letting that 22-year-old throw the bundle of shingles on his shoulder and climb up the ladder. It's like, you go for it. There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
My knees don't do that anymore.
Yeah, but I can tell you some safety hints if you're doing this, because I've been there, done that, and I can relate to what you're about to do. You know, this information is so important because if we're lucky, we will grow old. We're lucky. So being prepared to grow old should be something that we start when we're younger. Mm-hmm. So that we actually address things like purpose and a sense of self and the antagonism of ageism, which is so destructive.
Yes.
And also, you know, sharing what we know with people of all ages. I think this is something that we need to think about really hard. But I wanted to ask you about cognitive behavioral therapy, because I've heard that phrase and I just want to know quickly your take on what it does for people if they can have some help with that.
So CBT or cognitive behavior therapy is a form of therapy. It's one of the ones that I'm trained in, but I'm also trained in a multitude of others. Because as we said a little while ago, one thing doesn't fix everybody, right? One thing doesn't fix everybody. But what CBT is, it comes down to the cognitive behavior, and therapy is usually a repetition. So I'll give you a short answer for this. Let's say there is you have a behavior, a habit, or a characteristic or trait that you're not currently happy with, right? You're doing something. And so like maybe you get angry too quickly, right? You're too quick to anger. It's called reactionism, or you have outbursts of anger. Well, you're not happy with that. Neither are the people around you, which is why you're probably calling therapy. Well, we use cognition, so awareness. So we teach you to become aware of what is triggering you to get angry. We teach you to become aware of what your responses are. That's the awareness. That's the cognition. The behavior therapy is we now substitute in a different, healthier behavior. So we give you a different behavior to do as opposed to that one. Now, this doesn't happen overnight, right? This doesn't happen in one session. This is like, I tell people, I said, it's exercise. Whether it's mental or physical, you don't do something once and have it work. You have to keep doing it. So the breakdown of the words is the cognitive is becoming aware of something. So you have to be consciously aware of it. The behavior is we've identified the one we don't like. How do we substitute in when one we do like? And the therapy is when you put all those together, and through therapy sessions and through repeated actions of behaviors, the person learns to recognize ahead of time, okay, these triggers would normally set me off. That's lighting my fuse. So what can I do to have it not light my fuse? Mm-hmm. Right? How do I not let that, you know, we talk about, your kids know exactly what buttons to push to set the parents off. Well, spouses know the same thing too. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you change the combination? Mm-hmm. Right? How do you take those numbers out? That's a CBT, cognitive behavior therapy.
Does it work on anxiety as well?
Yes, it does. Yeah, it can work on anxiety because anxiety still has a behavior with it, mm-hmm. right? If your behavior is to withdraw, to not go out, to not want to get out of bed, to not want to do anything, that's still a behavior, right? That's so true. We don't just look at it as getting angry, right? You can say, I'm so anxious about the worldwide pandemic. I'm anxious about the situation in the Ukraine. I'm anxious about, and that's stopping me from, you know, maybe I do get out of bed, but is that stopping me from going out of the house? Mm-hmm. Or will I only go out of the house on bright sunny days? And as long as I can do my errand and be back, and it's like, doesn't take more than an hour. Okay, I'm okay. Well, mm-hmm. anything that affects your life, that restricts your life, is something that needs to be dealt with. And cognitive behavior therapy is one, and it can be very effective for people where it works. It's also important to keep in mind, it doesn't work for everybody.
No, so, like you said, everybody's unique. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody it's finding a therapist that can help find what's going to work for you.
Yeah, exactly. This has just been so interesting, Ian. I can't thank you enough because we covered so many topics, but I think the message is, you know, you're an individual and we need to figure out what's best, what the best approach is to help. If someone is suffering from too much stress, too much anxiety and overload and needs to explore new options, certainly around aging and houses and children, those are big topics, and money. Those are the big topics, I think, that are out there. This has been so enlightening. Thank you so much. What a wonderful opportunity to talk to somebody about what is going on in our head that makes our behavior a little odd sometimes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much.
You have been listening to Madeline Corelli talking with registered psychotherapist Ian Buchanan. Be sure to listen next week at this time when Madeline will be in conversation with another expert on a topic that will help us deal with aging, a new reality, right here on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio. Interviews in this series are conducted by Madeline Corelli, technical assistance by Trevor Joyce, production by Kevin Stewart, Olivia Waldrop, and Paige Johnston. Executive producer is Barry Walker. The preceding program has been a co-production of Northumberland 89.7 FM and the Community Training and Development Centre.